Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. The election is over, so we can resume our monthly visits with Charlotte's two-term mayor, Vi Lyles. You know, we had this one mayor for a very long time, 14 years. I've forgotten his name.
I remember it very well. I heard Pat on television last night telling people that I was his budget director and his assistant city manager. I think he's taking a little bit of credit here.
Proud of you.
I think that's
a good
thing.
But you're the first two-term mayor since Anthony Fox. He, of course, left for Washington to be the Secretary of Transportation in the Obama administration. He went to D.C. His successor, Patrick Cannon, went to jail. and Jennifer Roberts was kind of ushered out by the voters after one term. What's your reaction to being back for a second time?
Grateful, humbled, and ready to keep on working the agenda that we've got. This is an important time in our city's life. I think, you know, like anything else, you get to a certain point and you say, we've got to make that next big thing happen. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we've worked really hard on affordable housing and jobs, but getting more of the jobs where we have our people that are living here ready and prepared for them, that's another thing that we want to do.
When you came in for the first term, there were a lot of changes on city council, and a lot was made of the Young Turks coming in.
Yeah,
on
that's
council.
Right.
You have pretty much the same council. There are a couple of little changes here and there. Pretty much the mm-hmm. same council. Does that help you, because you know how each other works, does that help you do what you want to do in this city?
Oh, absolutely. I think our council has been working together so well. We may have disagreements, but in the end, we look for that place that everyone can move forward. So that's going to be a good thing, because that means that we can, you know, not take a break, not do a lot of new things. We can just say, what we're doing works, and that's what we're going to continue to do.
And everybody knows where the bathrooms are, so they don't
everyone.
Have to.
No, well, we've got a few new people. We're welcoming Renee Perkins Jenkins, and we're welcoming Victoria Watlington. And so it's really exciting, and I just think I put Renee's in District 4 with Greg Phipps leaving, and Victoria is in District 3, where Luana is leaving. Okay. So, new people. And Malcolm Graham, who's coming back.
You didn't really have, because he went away and was at the state senator for a while. You didn't really have a challenger. You had a challenger.
I had a challenger.
He runs every time, and he never campaigns, so that's
it. And he got a lot of votes.
What about that? He got a lot of votes.
I think that...
Are you in trouble? Are you in more trouble than you think?
You know, I have to say this. The last time I carried 59% of the vote, this time 77, I don't think that's trouble. I think we're moving in the right direction.
But why do you suppose the Republican Party did not mount a challenge?
You know, Charlotte, as I've said, when you're mayor, you have to govern for everyone. And I think that when we put aside party affiliations, most of our issues are community-based and around consensus of what this community wants and expects. And so that's why I don't think that they looked at not just the mayor, but in totality, what are we doing as a council? What are we doing as a city council in terms of making sure that we're going to be a place that's going to be great for people to live in the future?
Mm-hmm. let's talk about one of the things you focused on in your first term. That's affordable mm-hmm. housing.
Yeah.
You pushed voters to pass, and they did, the $50 million referendum supplying money for affordable housing. You urged business to kick in an additional $50 million, and they did. And you touted the success of those efforts during your campaign, but everybody knows, and you certainly know this, that there's a lot more work to do. What else can the mayor do? What else can the city do?
Well, we're working really hard. So I agree. We've got over 1,000 units under construction or renovation, but we know that the need is much greater. So we've got to determine, how do we keep affordability where affordability exists today? And I've been having meetings with the Charlotte Apartment Association, with REBIC, which is the real estate developers. But the thing that I think most people don't realize, a lot of affordability comes from individual owners. Someone may own 10 to 100 or 200 units, and they're just quietly doing what they do. What I want to do is call those folks together to say, we appreciate what you're doing, and will you continue to do it? Our challenge is with development and land costs in our city. How do we make sure that people that are living in those affordable places, you know, you may have a one-bedroom for $600 to $700, how do we make sure that those remain in place? And I'm going to be looking to those private citizens and appealing to them through their houses of worship, through their business connections, just through the tax consequences. We've got to learn more about how rentals are done financially and how to make them continue to do that so that they have the right finances to maintain them.
You have $100 million at your disposal in the kitty from the referendum and the business community. How is that money being spent?
Well, we did spend approximately, I think, $12 million on the 1,000 units that we're subsidizing now. We're using tax credits, housing trust fund, as well as the money that the private sector put up. So what we need to do financially going forward is determine how many subsidized places that we're going to do and rent subsidies. Can we subsidize people that are on the verge of losing their apartment just by affordability? But you know, the overall game for this is increasing jobs and increasing wages. People that are working two and three jobs at the minimum wage, we've got to figure out how to change that so that they can have a really decent way to
live. Well, $100 million to most people sounds like a heck of a lot of money, and it's not. It doesn't even scratch the surface of what is actually needed, and as you pointed out, the problem really is multifaceted. There's not enough housing stock, but more existing units are being threatened by growth and development and gentrification. Rents are way too high for a lot of people, and that's what you're talking about. Yeah. Wages are too low, and experts say we can't build our way out of this problem. Have to be addressed.
I'm not an expert, and I tell people every day we can't build our way out of this. So we've got to figure out how to create pathways for good-paying jobs that people can afford to live. A lot of that is around, you know, even in our organization, I have to give a lot of credit to the city manager for creating apprenticeship programs in the airport, in Charlotte Water, and in our solid waste area. We're trying, and engineering, we've got four areas that we're bringing in people and saying, come to the city, apprenticeship. You will, at the end of your apprenticeship time, learning and being trained, able to get a decent job with health care and benefits. Those are the things that we have to do. So a number of companies are beginning to address this. I have to give a shout out to Charlotte FinTech. You know, Bakari has talked about this a lot. He has a graduating class of about 30 people that took 6 months. These people were working $8.75, $10 an hour jobs, and they walked out with $40,000 to $50,000 to $60,000. That's the kind of individual effort. How do we take it to scale now? That's what we've got to do.
WFAE's Lisa Wharf reported on this not too long ago, and she mentioned that the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Opportunity Task Force recommended in 2017 that a voluntary strategy be promoted where the city would encourage employers to raise wages and improve benefits for their lowest-paid employees. And she reported that so far, Charlotte hadn't pursued this idea in a coordinated way, while other North Carolina cities have.
Well, I'm not sure why that's written that way, but as you know, when we talked about that and we had it, first of all, what's our largest employer? Healthcare systems, the two systems, Atrium and Novant, and they all agreed that they would go to a higher living wage, and living wage, I should probably say, a wage that allows you to live in Charlotte, and they're doing that. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, so I'm not quite sure what that means, but we all need to understand the real burden on this kind of wage increase comes within our small businesses. And, you know, small businesses walk often on the edge. I know this because my brothers have a small business. And the ability to pay people when times are good, they were so proud when health care was something they could provide to their employees, my brothers. Mm-hmm. But when it became so unaffordable and the recession hit, and now small businesses are afraid to step out too far. And so we've got to determine how do we make sure our small businesses have the ability to give their employees benefits. If we take benefits out of the equation, I think a number of our jobs would be at the wage that we can live
in. It used to be said that benefits add about 30% to the cost of an employee from the employer's point of view. Is it still 30%?
That's about that, yes.
Even though the cost of health care has risen precipitously, it's still 30%?
Well, you know, and I know I can speak for the city. Our health care has not risen so much that it's not changed with the wages. In other organizations, depending on how you're insured, self-insured, what are your choices and options, I would think that the biggest change in wages in the corporate world is the defined benefit package for retirement more than health care.
So City Council will be voting soon on transit-oriented development rezoning along the whole length of the existing Blue Line from the university right down to I-485 in the south. Light rail certainly acted as a catalyst for development, and this rezoning would impact everything from top to bottom, a half mile out on either side of the track. Does it worry you that this will simply result in more high-dollar development and pushing more people out, or is a lot of this land undeveloped?
Well, almost all of the land is owned by someone, and so those choices that the private owner will make. But I think we should have done this years ago. We know where the line is. The things that we've learned from the red and the blue line, we will incorporate in the silver line so that we can do some of this early
Where's the red line?
Oh, I'm sorry. I call it the red line. That, you know, once you go south and north, it's blue line. So sorry.
Okay, I see.
The
north and south sections of the blue line. Okay, fine.
I'm just showing when I came along with this plan with transit. So, but just taking the blue line as an example, it's going to help us better plan for the silver line, I believe.
CATS is looking for funding from council. I think $50 million was the last figure I heard to conduct a study to see how much building the Silver Line would cost.
Let's not say for building it, to design it. It's like really design costs. And when you think of $50 million for a project that's likely to be, you know, more than I would like to talk about, but in the billions,
I think most people, myself included, when I heard $50 million to study how to build this line from Matthews to Belmont in Gaston County, I thought that they would be taking design into consideration, because once you figure out it's going to cost X number of dollars to cross Independence Boulevard, then you've designed it. That's how you know what it costs. You're telling me this is not that.
Actually, it is to design 26 miles of light rail. And so you have to start off, and you have to cost it, because you can't go to the federal government without a design and an actual cost that's approved in a way by not you and I sketching something on a napkin, but by people that know how to do this.
So when this is done, if you vote yes, if the council votes yes on this $50 million and they do this study, then they will know what it costs, and they will know, and they will have the design in their back
30%
pocket.
30% of the design will be done.
Okay. Before we really get...
This is a complex project. It's not something that, you know, we're just going to be able to say, here it is, everyone.
As part of this, given the concerns we've talked about with affordable housing and the fact that you have said that we should have done what we're about to do along the blue line from the get-go, will affordable housing needs be taken into consideration as they do this study to go?
That's one of the most exciting parts of what I think the Silver Line gives us an opportunity to do. You know, the federal government allows you to actually buy land for affordable housing when you construct a project like this. And so we can begin to think about how we can build that affordable housing and look at the land that we can acquire as we acquire land for the line.
Because in 2002, the city adopted a policy that said Charlotte would aggressively pursue opportunities to develop affordable housing within transit station areas. That didn't happen. Why? You weren't on council then.
I wasn't on the council then.
So why didn't it happen, though?
Well, I'm not really sure that I can answer why it didn't happen, but I think that what I'm saying now, today, is with the Silver Line, we have the opportunity to make it happen.
So is this why Mayor Pro Tem Julie Eisel has said that Charlotte needs to proactively purchase property along the Silver Line?
That's exactly correct.
Where will that money come from?
Well, as I said, the federal government allows you to do this with their money and to be able to finance it and pay it back with city funds. I hope that our housing is not a flash in the pan. We've got $50 million this past year, and on the referendum coming up in 2020, we will have an additional $50 million. I think affordable housing is going to be one of our just primary infrastructure projects for our city.
So the council delayed a vote on the $50 million for this study that CATS wants to do. Is it likely to pass when they decide to vote on it this month? Is it likely to pass? What would your recommendation to council be?
You know, if we're going to talk about equity and we're going to talk about inclusion. If you look at the east side of town, they have the lowest number of jobs in the entire city in terms of a percentage. So if we're going to do something, we need to go ahead and build the ability for people to have transportation to jobs. We need to make it possible that a business can locate there and employees can get to work. That is one of the things in corporate and industrial, they look and say, how are my employees going to get to the site that we want to be? And that's why we're flourishing downtown. We need to begin to flourish in every quadrant of the city. And so it is most important, but it's not just, you know, because it's a rail line. It's because it is a destination for people to go to work.
Council, I believe, delayed this vote because they wanted to see what voters would decide on the quarter-cent sales tax for arts, parks, recreation, and
I think some people did see it that way, yes.
Now that the voters have said no to that sales tax hike for the second time in, I think, 5 years, do you think voters would be open to a quarter-cent sales tax hike for transit?
I think that we've got to make that argument. I think we've got to lay out what it means to do something like this. But it's not just, you know, I think we're kind of reducing the sales tax to the silver line. But what we've got to do is figure out how to have transportation improvements throughout the city. I've heard actually you talk about driving into work sometimes and the congestion that we've got. So to
don't
me,
don't get me started.
Oh, I won't. I promise you. I'm sorry. Let me retract that. Mike has a great commute into his work every morning. So, but really what we've got to look at is congestion, intersections, signalization, our bus system, and our rail system. This is a combination that we need to do. And I think the voters know they experience it every day.
So that quarter cent sales tax would bring in about $50 million, which would pay for the study, by the way. I just want to point that out. But after that, what would $50 million mean to transit? That's really a drop in the bucket when you come right down to it for transit.
But, you know, just like anything else, and I think it's just like when you buy your house, if your house is $250,000, you don't have to pay the $250 on the time that you close. You pay a down payment, and you make payments over 20 to 30 years. Well, on a system like this, it's pretty much like people's houses. We just need enough to be able to go to New York and sell bonds and tell them that we can afford annual payments up until the term of our mortgage.
Transit is one of the areas, and as you say, it's more than just the silver line. It's a lot of different things. If you had to prioritize all the things you just mentioned, signaling and street improvements and bus improvements, et cetera, what would be at the top of the list?
I think our bus system improvements are at the top of the list. I think they're the place where 60-minute headways are. I think when we get a lot of this development, we can improve our traffic signalization on Providence, on Fairview, some of these places. But the investment in the rail is the long term.
Okay. We have to take a break. We'll come back and talk more with Mayor Vi Lyles. Now, just getting ready to start her second term. It doesn't start until December, but
yeah,
she's celebrating this morning. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles is back with us. Took a little time off for the election because we want to be fair, but now that she has won re-election, she is back for our monthly get-together. Homicide numbers continue to rise in Charlotte. Never a pleasant thing to talk about. We're on track to have the deadliest year here in decades. We had broad daylight shooting not too long ago on College Street outside of the epicenter where a corporate executive lost his life.
And a 16-year-old is accused of that.
Yep. We have other victims, of course, all over town. They range in age from 7 months to 71 years old. CMPD has cried out for help from people in communities most affected, but they're not getting that cooperation from those communities. What role did this play in your campaign? Did this come up? How did you address this in your campaign?
You know, I didn't have to address it in a campaign. This is something when you're the mayor, you see every day, you get the reports on what's happening and how they happen, and you talk with the chief and you talk with the people that have to deal with this every day. It wasn't, for me, a campaign issue at all. This violence since the summer, and we started on this path of over 90 homicides, it has been something that we have got to think through. We've had meetings and meetings, but what do we do after? So we have on our plate ideas around how to keep neighborhoods safe, how to engage with neighborhoods. And I think it takes some time. You just don't say one day, invite me into the living room, I'm having dinner with you. You have to first, meet the neighborhood. You have to meet them where they are. But we continue to identify areas and populations that are most impacted by violence and work with nonprofit groups, community organizations, and ask them to help us get out the message on this, that we don't have to resolve things with a gun.
We've been talking about this for years now. How many of these efforts are already underway, and what more can a city do? What more can the CMPD do, or Chief Kirkputney do, or the sheriff, because the sheriff's doing things in the jails to try to help with recidivism. What else can be done?
Just like other areas of challenge have begun to be studied more carefully and with more data, we're trying to analyze and look at data more carefully around homicides. But it's very difficult to think about a person as a data point,
Right.
And it's very difficult to think that a neighborhood is defined by violence. And so we've got a lot of work to do. It's not just the work that CMPD does. It's how do we analyze, like, where our calls are coming in for service for garbage collection? Are we able to see where people are throwing trash or parking in the wrong place? And what does that lead to? It's complex, but we're beginning to think about this as both the human side of it as well as the structural part of it. And doing that means that we are putting together some thoughts and for people. But we're also going to look at the hard data to see what do we need to focus on most.
You said it's hard to boil things down to data points on people, but you have said you want to gather quantitative data.
We do.
Before coming up with an action plan. So what is the status of that? Where are you in that process?
Well, we've done a lot so far. I mean, CMPD has, initiated things around arrest points, how many of them involve guns, but more importantly, where there's activity that causes this violence, like drugs going on. Are we seeing a resurgence in drug activity? But domestic violence has always been a constant in this. We've lost, I think, 11 people to domestic violence, and that's really heartbreaking.
That's nearly 10% of the people who died.
It is. And that's a very difficult thing to do. So I think we have to have a holistic approach, but we need to engage our neighborhoods where these data points are happening, mm-hmm. and saying, what is going on? If we have to go house to house to house to interview and say, what's going on? What happened on your block? What happens in your neighborhood? How do we make sure that we can do something better?
Who does that? Who goes into those neighborhoods to ask those questions or to have those conversations? Is it you? Is it the city council? Is it the police department? Who does that?
Well, we have a couple of people doing that. We have our community relations committee staff doing that, calling people into a space where we say, well, men that want to help out on neighborhoods and where they can go and help us do work that's going to be evidence-based. That's what we're really trying to find. But we have community relations. We have our neighborhood development teams and staff people going out. Where do we have housing that's dilapidated that might become a place for activities that we don't want to occur in our city? And then we have CMPD. But we've also got to look, and every person, all of our employees know that this is an issue that's got to be dealt with.
A lot of this is economic. A lot of this is opportunity. Just being given an alternative to what your present reality is. And I know that you're working on this on a lot of different fronts, among them growth and development and jobs to accompany that growth and development. And you were, I'm sure, pleased to announce that Microsoft is going to invest nearly, $24 million and add hundreds of high-paying jobs in an expansion of its Charlotte campus. Now, these are 430 jobs paying, on average, $98,000 mm-hmm. a year. Does that help with economic growth and opportunity, given the fact that people who are going to get $98,000 a year are going to be fairly skilled workers who either are already here or are going to come here from elsewhere? How does that help?
So it does help, because then we can begin to plan for those jobs. Not everybody's going to be hired immediately. So if we've got students at Central Piedmont, if we've got students at UNC Charlotte, or if we've got even high school students, it gives them a path to see that there's a job out there and an opportunity for them in the tech world. But more importantly, when we look at, we also had another company come in, Chime, with 200 jobs. And those jobs were $14 an hour with benefits, childcare subsidy, as well as health care. And so when we look at those types of jobs, we're going to recruit those as well. And so we've got to balance jobs that are high paying, I think, give us the long view, jobs that are immediately around the $14 to $16 an hour. They are immediate. We're working with both of our healthcare organizations to talk about how do we get kids in high school to understand the path to being a nurse or a assistant to a doctor, radiologist, all of those things. I just want to compliment the president of Central Piedmont Community College. She and I are talking about this with our healthcare systems to say, let's see what we can get for kids that immediately need an economic, need to make a living. When they come out of high school, they need a job. And so how do we do that? Can they intern while they're working and getting their degrees? We have the opportunity to build something unique in this city because we are growing.
Let's go back to this technology thing, because the technology sector, despite the fact that Amazon said we didn't have enough talent here, it continues to grow. The Charlotte Regional Business Alliance says the total number of tech jobs rose by 30% over just the last 5 years. That's an increase of 117,694 jobs. This latest batch of jobs from Microsoft that you referenced, they're in the tech sector. We are growing that sector. How recession-proof, because recession could be on the horizon, how recession-proof is that sector?
Now you're going to have to talk
How big a role does that play in Charlotte's economy?
You're going to have to talk to Ed Driggs. He's our economics professor on the council, so I'm not going to predict a recession. I have my sense of where we are is that if we continue to develop the appropriate way, are we recession-proof? Maybe not, but will we be hurt like we were the last time? I would hope not.
There's another Charlotte-based company called Stratified, Stratifyd.
Homegrown.
Yeah, adding about 200 jobs here. Another technology company. What do they do?
Well, now, what my understanding from,
it's
I think he was a professor, he is a professor, started this project at UNC Charlotte. Wang is his last name. And he came in and he said what he does is he takes artificial intelligence and he develops the factors out of that to provide other companies with the ability to do analytics. Now, that's as far as I can go. Dr. Wayne, you will have to call in and explain what Stratified does, but I think it means that you're helping people with data that's going to help their businesses grow.
So, once again, this is going to be probably skilled workers, probably making a decent amount of money, and maybe coming in from the outside. And if Microsoft is bringing in 430 jobs, many of those will have to come, I would think, from the outside. So
I would hope not, Mike. I think our university is doing a great job. The informatics in college at UNC Charlotte is producing people left and right. You know, when we had MetLife, UNC Charlotte put together a program for people that do the projections, and I don't recall the word right now, but the projections for life insurance. And so now...
Actuarials.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's what they did. And so, but now we have people that
I have
that
no
are,
idea what that means, by the way.
It just means that one of us is going to go soon, and then they'll know exactly how when that's going to happen. So, but what I believe UNC Charlotte is doing is looking at where these jobs are going to grow, and they're preparing young people. You know, we have two colleges that include high schools at UNC Charlotte in education and engineering. That's how we're going to make sure these jobs are for people in our community.
Well, I was going to ask you, and maybe you just answered my question already and neutralized the concern, but I was, as high-paying jobs come into the city and attract people from outside in, we already have this really tight real estate market. We already have a disappearance of affordable housing because of the land is more valuable than the house, and developers see that. They give you some money. They build a 23-story building on top of it and make money, even more money. does this hurt your efforts? As these high-paying jobs become more available, does this help or hurt your efforts to preserve and grow affordable housing stock?
I think it's a challenge, yes. It's particularly difficult where we see the inability for the Housing Authority, which was our place that people under 30% of AMI would be able to find a place to live. That is really something that we've got to worry about. But I think it is a challenge, and we're going to have to figure out how to buy this land ourselves, mm-hmm. how to work with people that would like to make a charitable gift. If you look at the Brooks Hamburger Stand, which is a great hamburger over in Noda, but they donated property that they had on the east side for affordable housing. And they did it because of their ability to say, we grew up in Charlotte, we've got a successful business, this land we're not going to use, we want it to be a part of it. Our corporations are doing the same thing. So I think it's a challenge, but we're figuring out ways to make it work.
Speaking of affordable housing again, we're having a public conversation about this on Tuesday, November the 12th. Are you going to be there?
I don't think so.
Anyway, you can listen. It's on November the
12th. I listen to you on Friday mornings and sometimes in the car.
Thank you. Yeah. Anyway, our public conversation will be on Tuesday, November the 12th on affordable housing and the work remaining. It will be at the Harvey Gantt Center, and you can listen live that night. I don't know if there are seats available still, but you can check out our website at WFAE.org to find out more. Let's talk about Chime Solutions before we move on.
Can I say something? Yes. I want to say thank you for doing the workshop. When we started 2 years ago, it was just, you know, $15 million. We're now 50. We're up to 100, and people are getting educated. And so when you have those forums and workshops about these issues, it's really, really helpful to us, because the more that we understand what we're trying to do, I think the better we get at it. So thank you.
You're welcome. That's what we do. It's our mission. There's this Atlanta-based firm that you mentioned, Chime Solutions. They plan to hire 400 people by early October, 1,000 people by the end of next year. Mm-hmm. Have those jobs materialized, those 400 jobs yet?
You know, the day after the announcement, the Urban League held a job fair. And Pedro, who is at Charlotte Family Housing, who helps women that are in difficult situations with families, and I got an email from him saying that they had sent 10 of their folks down, and one of them walked out with a job offer. So, yes, it's making a difference.
This is a family-owned company whose goal is to hire in cities that have talent in communities that have historically been overlooked. And the CEO of that company characterize Charlotte as definitely one of those cities. And you have said that we must acknowledge the role segregation has played in the development of our city, especially when it comes to creating equitable and just communities.
That's right.
Isn't that something, though, that every city in America can say about itself?
I don't know that every city would have this issue. I don't expect our demographics always are consistent with every place. But we know when we are in the South, that is an issue for us. I mean, it's our history, and we just have to own it.
Okay. Let's talk a moment about the arts tax, which was defeated. The referendum was defeated yesterday by the voters. I know that you were in favor of this, as were many other Charlotte leaders. What's your reaction?
Well, I think that it's one of those areas that we didn't have the ability to explain why. I was particularly interested in the areas where we're having parks. I was particularly interested in the arts area, because I do believe that to be a city that stays in the area of attractiveness for people, we have to have a culture. We have to have people that, like you, perform, act, dance, a creative community. And I thought that the arts tax would help us maintain that and grow. In parks, it's really important, because as we're doing development, I had begun to work with the county manager and the Parks and Recreation Commission. When we're doing all of this development, open space, pocket parks, basketball courts, they're all very important to an urban community, and we needed the ability to stop talking about the, you know, large fields, but to come into the city. So these are needs, and I think it's just going back to the drawing board and figuring out the need didn't go away, the method of financing the voters didn't approve, and we need to just ask, what do we do next?
Just as a sidebar here, we are underparked in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg area. And Commissioner Pat Cotham told me after our conversation in Spirit Square a couple weeks ago that Charlotte-Mecklenburg County has no state parks. Wake County has a bunch of them because that's where the capital is. We have no state parks, so it's on us. With that, I have to leave. Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles, congratulations on your second term. Thanks for
being here. Thank you, Mike. Thanks to the voters.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.